come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
We hear you looking for Candyman, bitch. This is the Saturday Night Freak Show.
That was threatening.
And these are the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast regulars.
That was a short startup. Travis.
Sean.
And I'm Colin.
Caught us off guard. Holy shit.
Every Saturday night, the Freak Show happens right here.
Waiting for that spiel.
On an actual Saturday night. Holy shit.
That's wait, right. Don't ruin the myth.
Put the curtain back.
And as always, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and more. Please give us a like or a star rating if you like what you hear here, or drop us a comment. If you mention anything on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show, or on Twitter at Sat Freak Show, we'll read your comments on the air later on when we summon Igor to bring us the mailbag. So tonight, Sean brought us the movie. What did we watch tonight, Sean?
Excuse me. We watched Candyman, 1992.
Directed by?
I keep wanting to say Barbara Rose. It's Bernard Rose.
It could be Bernard.
It could be Bernard. based on a short story by Clive Barker?
Yes.
Or at least a story by Clive Barker called The Forbidden.
It was in one of the books of blood, which were published here in America under the titles...
In the Flesh.
Yep.
No.
In the Flesh.
Yeah, in the Flesh. The first one was just called Books of Blood, right? Or a Book of Blood? Oh.
And there was Cabal.
Cabal was a Book of Blood?
I think so, because there was like four short stories and then the longer one, Cabal, which was Nightbreed.
That's where it was.
God, I can't remember the Inhuman Condition?
The Inhuman Condition, In the Flesh.
I can't remember which one the Forbidden is in. But I've read it.
Yeah? I couldn't find it.
The Forbidden takes place in an English ghetto where there is a university student who's doing a research on an urban myth about the Candyman. And the Candyman in the story, if I remember correctly, the image that I had in my head was that he had patchwork, bright-colored pajama pants. He wore a top hat, maybe, had long blonde hair and was really pale. And he had a hook for a hand.
Mm.
So
quite a difference from Tony Todd.
Yes. So that's, I guess, brings us to the movie.
The movie, which I call the Dangerous Minds of Horror. It's the white lady goes to the ghetto and apologizes for like how white people are.
For racism.
We don't hate you all. Like, she's just so apologetic to us. Like, I mean, it's not so like the movie doesn't like shove it down your throat, but it's definitely there. It's fucking totally there.
There are some, they do go over a few racial issues.
Well, yeah, because they relocated the story to Chicago, Illinois.
Cabrini Green.
One of the worst housing projects in human history. I think most dangerous.
I would say so,
most dangerous were
most dangerous.
One of them.
It developed a reputation, to say the least, since torn down. Throughout the aughts, I believe they tore all that down.
There anymore. It was that bad. Gang control.
And then they sent everybody here.
Yeah. So the question is, Sir Bernard Rose, we know him from movies such as?
You tell me.
Well, anybody see a movie called Paper House?
Nope.
Okay, he did that before this. Anybody see Chicago Joe and the Showgirl?
No.
Immortal Beloved.
I don't know Bernard Rose.
No, you do.
I'm getting Beloved. If he starts obscure, he'll get to something we know.
Yeah, he also did... He did a version of Frankenstein that's out in theaters and recently, or direct-to-video. He did something called SX Tape. It's found footage.
Okay. I don't know Bernard Rose.
All right, then.
I'm just going to tell you.
He's just kind of gone and waddled off into obscurity then.
Apparently.
From Immortal Beloved.
The Devil's Violinist.
No.
Well, I can kind of see why.
He wrote and directed Candyman, so he's responsible for the inspiration, I think, to relocate it to a Chicago ghetto.
Yes.
Which is interesting because he uses a lot of real-life Cabrini Green mythology and incorporated it into the story. This is like the thing that
works.
It makes the story The Forbidden you know, take on like this, you know, cinematic life. You know, I mean, it gives the story like an extra layer of interest.
Especially considering they shot in Cabrini Green and used a bunch of gang members. Like they had to negotiate with the gang members to shoot in Cabrini Green for like to guarantee their safety on set. Like you got to put us in the movie too.
Do I hear when paramedics go to Cabrini or used to go to Cabrini Green, the gang members would always have to bring down the victims. The paramedics were never allowed in Cabrini Green. Like they could park there. And then they would get victims brought to, I mean, it's that kind of fucking place that, you know, crime rules supreme, you know, governments can't fucking even do anything about it except for tear it down and send them like, you know, disperse the people. That's all they can do.
It has to be like a military operation to actually go in there and do a sweep. You got to go in force, you know, which that a scene like that is alluded to in the movie, but we don't actually get
they
to said, see it.
Yeah, they swept from top to bottom.
That's so this is me. About a white. She's a university student, right?
She's like, University of Illinois
graduate student. They said,
Working on her thesis. She's definitely older.
Like, working on her thesis.
Jesus, don't have a job.
Helen Lyle. Helen Lyle. Helen
and her friend
Virginia Madsen, who we know from
a good looking Virginia Madsen.
I don't know Virginia Madsen.
Highlander 2, The Quickening?
No one saw that.
What are you talking about? I was there opening fucking night. I loved Highlander.
I bet you were.
You do. You have a thing for Highlander.
I hated The Quickening.
That.
It was one of the worst pieces of shit.
Oh, man.
She's also been in Sideways, a movie that was nominated for an Academy Award. She was in A Haunting in Connecticut.
The number 23?
The number 23. Yeah. She's been in The Prophecy. Remember Christopher Walken? Yeah, she's
Wasn't
in
she
that.
In a TV show?
Lots of them.
Lots of TV shows. Yeah, a bunch of stuff.
So she's a graduate student working on her thesis. Her thesis is about modern
mythology, and,
like urban legends.
Urban legends.
Yeah, which is an interesting take, I guess. You know, subject for a horror movie,
right?
You know, the idea that like you have these kind of because they use the example of the alligator in the sewers. You know, like her husband teaches a class on this also, but the idea that you have like these kind of folklore. I mean, it's kind of like we did this later with The Ring, right? The idea of the story that would kind of, it's like a viral.
Yeah. Kind of goes from person to person.
And takes on
it's
a
like,
life.
Yeah, my brother's roommate, he knows her and everything. Yeah. Everybody knows somebody who knows somebody who knows the person it actually happened to.
Right.
Urban legends.
Yeah. Which none of them turn out to be.
Not really.
Necessarily. I mean,
there may be like a seed of something that like blossomed into this complete myth that. Has grown over time, but Candyman, well, according to, I forgot the actor who plays him, the very British.
The professor?
The professor, the long-haired professor.
Yeah.
Later in the movie, kind of gives the whole history of Candyman.
And this is, that history is unique to the movie also. That's not in the short story.
Right.
It was good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, Clive Barker is the executive producer on this. So, yes. I wouldn't be surprised if he had a hand in some of the, you know,
especially stuff like that story. Like
just kind of story elements. I'm sure he would have talked to Bernard.
Bernard. We're saying Bernard is British,
oh, yes, Bernard.
Right?
I don't know. Is he British? Guy? If he's British, Paper it's House definitely British. Bernard. Yeah. Like I won't even guess.
Bernard Herman. Rose.
Bernard Rose.
Bernard.
Yeah.
Oh yes, Bernard. I have an idea. Come here.
Well, Clive Barker.
Oh, is
had
it good? By Jove.
He had a couple of his stories adapted prior to this. That I think, like he disowned them. They were so bad. Transmutations. Anyone?
This is Clive or Bernard?
Clive Barker and Rawhead Rex.
Rawhead Rex.
He was extremely disappointed with both of those.
I used to love Rawhead Rex, though. Like, growing up, like, Rawhead Rex always captured my imagination.
I've read the story.
You
showed me. They look horrifying.
I was just I was actually just mentioning to Colin a few minutes ago that I recently just bought Hellboy meets Rawhead Rex.
Really?
Yeah, dude. I haven't read it yet. But.
So they're bringing him back. Yeah. Well, the design of the creature in the movie is kind of cool. I mean, stiffly animatronic. Right.
I think Clive Barker just comes up with good monsters. The guy knows a good monster. He knows how to write these like weird demons. Well, especially because I think he is kind of a... how do I say it? A sexual, like... miscreant. Like, I think I like Clive Barker's storytelling, but man, I think that fucking guy is revealing shit about himself when he writes about Pinhead and Rawhead Rex, and it's always going to be extremely sexual and very anti-religious. And by God, if he doesn't mix the two at some point, you know, it's just very like, Jesus Christ, man.
Like the way we're afraid to use the word deviant anymore. Right. But
it
that
just means
that's
a deviation from like what
well,
is
but he is a deviant. Wasn't he charged with giving his boyfriend HIV, like knowingly? I mean, didn't this just happen a few months ago? Yeah.
I remember that.
I've never seen an interview with Clive Barker where he doesn't have a fucking statue of a dick around him. Yeah. It's like, why do you got to be? I'm like, I get it if you like. I don't care who you fuck. I'm just saying, at some point, if you have to be surrounded by dicks, it's like you might be a pervert. You just might be a little like, I'm an artist. I need to surround myself with beautiful things. What, like dicks? Yes, exactly. But that's beside the point. I think that's what helps us writing, right? I want my demons of shit to be like,
sure.
Oh, you know, I want demons to break the boundary. I want them to be like, Jesus Christ, this turns my stomach reading. Like, I feel like I should put it down. Like,
yeah, I just remember a scene from Rawhead Rex where, like, the thing has to pee on this priest that's been converted. And that was like,
he baptizes him in piss.
baptizes
him in piss.
Only
dude.
Clive Barker would think that.
We've been doing this for 3 years.
Dude, in the
this
short,
movie's not made it.
In the short story. After he kills the other priest, and we're gonna stop talking about Rawhead Rex in a second. But he goes to kill the main priest in the church, and then after he kills the priest, he looks at a image of a crucified Jesus and masturbates. It's just like, oh my God, Clive Barker, like Jesus Christ, yeah. Like this fucking guy. So
I hope it's like 5 minutes long, and it's just like.
Well, that's why it's like his characters are always so like, ugh. Even this movie, there's like a sexual tone to Candyman, right?
Be my victim.
Yeah, there's a very like, oh man, if you succumb to me, like it's always about giving into power or something.
Yeah.
Well, he's tempting her, right? Or seducing her. I suppose
trying
in
to,
some
yes.
way he's trying to seduce this woman to be his victim, which is like
weird, right?
Yeah.
It was always you, Helen.
Yeah. You have to want to die with yes. Candyman.
And he's gonna do everything in his power to make you want to die.
Because she doesn't believe in Candyman. That's her whole point, right? Is we have these urban legends.
She wants to break it down.
Cabrini Green has a famous story about some woman that just died through Candyman coming through her mirror.
Ruthie Jean, yeah.
And she figures out that, and this is actually kind of based on a true crime incident of Cabrini Green, about how the apartments are connected through the medicine cabinet. If you knock one out, you can get into the other apartments. So people were breaking into people's apartments. So I thought that was really cool. They used that for this.
Girl X.
Well, because we didn't mention that Candyman's kind of a Bloody Mary. It's a,
basically,
you say Candyman five times and then he appears before you,
if
breathing down your neck or whatever. Which was a really weird backflash scene. Like when we go into the girl's story at the very beginning.
Yeah.
And Ted Raimi's there.
Ted Raimi's there.
Yeah.
He looks like a greaser, like bad boy, but it's like clearly still the 90s or something like that. Like, it's a very weird tone.
Well, we know he's a bad boy because he wears a leather jacket.
Maybe
and
those
drinks
are,
some beer.
But that's where the time where they were like, wore leather jackets as like suit coats and shit.
Actually, you know
time.
What? You know
that's
what?
The best
you wear
time.
Like a tie underneath.
Right, yeah,
that
a tie, a shirt, yeah, but a leather fucking dress coat.
I actually just figured this out, and this is why this director's like kind of good, but like, oh, dude, you miss people on this. He's trying to give people the version they're seeing, like this character Helen, right? Mm. She's hearing this story, so she's imagining this 50s greaser boy coming over to the babysitter, because then later when she goes to Cabrini Green, there's a boy telling her about a handicapped kid that goes, and she's imagining the 70s. And we learn later in the movie that that is something that happened recently.
The murder, yeah.
The murder, because she actually finds, like, once she finds that, oh, yeah, people come through the window, come through the medicine cabinet, and they blame it on Candyman, they find that, oh, there is actually some dude on the block posing as Candyman.
Yeah.
Which that's where that whole, I like that line. You looking for Candyman, bitch?
You looking for
Candyman? The lineup.
The lineup where they all say, I hear you're looking for Candyman, bitch.
Yeah.
I hear you're looking for Candyman, bitch.
So this is like the moment this time around watching the movie, I became more aware of it. It's like she doesn't believe in the Candyman. She says Candyman 5 times in a mirror, like fairly early on in the movie. Yes. And then I think they go to Cabrini Green after that. No, that's when they get back, right? No, yeah, they go after that. And she's like, look, this is the cabinet, you know.
Yeah, because she does her research on her building.
That's when she's showing her friend.
Right, she's doing the research. The building was actually built as a project. So she's showing her, like, the cinder blocks all covered in plaster. And, like, there's only the medicine cabinets between the two apartments and everything.
But then they go to Cabrini Green to actually check out the real deal.
So and at no point in this does Candyman actually show up. No. Maybe we're waiting for him to show up, so that misdirection of, like, when the guy in the black coat steps into the frame and the little kid turns around, like, Candyman.
Candyman. You know, we're supposed to think cool that scene,
is
I like him. That.
Right, like that, yeah, it's setting it that up to, like, give us that, and then after that whole event is over, that's, like, the first, like,
and it gives you that scary,
movie.
Like, they go to the bathroom and, like, Candyman's in there. Like, yeah. It's like, ugh.
Yeah, in the world's worst fucking toilet. It may be next to the toilet in trains. Spotting like the grimiest fucking public toilet.
Grimy is a great word to describe. Like I can almost
grimy. Covered in shit. Is
I can almost smell this movie.
Yeah, just, dude, that scene's always made me sick.
That like, oh, that scene, like just or when they're just when they first enter Cabrini Green and they're just walking up the stairs.
Yeah, you smell that?
I can almost yeah. Because
what
I've
does
seen,
it smell like? Urine,
it just,
crack.
It does. It just it's got that.
It smells like urine
that's,
and crack.
Like that's the shit that like scares me. Like being in areas like the
urban
that.
Area.
Urban, yeah, urban development scares.
What are you
the
doing
shit
here? Nothing. We're just leaving.
Oh God, it does. But
that's why,
just because of the dinginess. It's
just
like,
yeah, because
it's not
like,
our
I
place.
No,
we're of a pale persuasion.
We don't belong there.
We're not.
No, but yeah, the
I
like
we
said,
have privilege.
Grimy,
they say.
Dingy. Like the when she goes, the toilets especially bother me because like that just that whole thing. Oh no,
dude, written
no.
In shit. I like sweets to
ugh.
The sweet to the
written
sweets.
Shit on the wall. No, oh
yeah.
I'll keep you out of there though. If that's your headquarters, like I know how to keep them out. That's like a
yeah,
better than a fucking bat hound or like a force field. Be like right with shit on the wall. People stay out. Good idea.
Well, oh, she gets assaulted in this bathroom by this guy who's been calling himself the Candyman, but he ends up being like he was the leader of the Overlords gang or something like that. And so it's somewhere around here at this point in the movie where, you know, she's talking to she's been assaulted. She goes to the police station. She has this guy arrested and she's talking to this little kid and the little kid believes in Candyman because Candyman's just this, you know, legend that they've been telling around Cabrini Green and all over the place to keep people in line, basically.
Yep.
But she's telling the kid like Candyman isn't real. This bad guy took his name and
kind of reproduced the murders.
Yeah. And to me, that was the moment that actually that's what sealed her, you know, her. And then after that, you're going to meet the Candyman.
Cause the kid's like, Candyman isn't real.
Cause she's like, this is probably like the most she's ever investigated at actual folklore or something. Cause I mean, she don't even know the legend really. No. That's, you know, she has that professor guy who basically fills her in.
Right, but she's breaking it down. Like, the mystique around it is going away. Like,
right.
Her telling the kid and the kid believing it
because
that he's not
it
there.
Only does exist in Cabrini Green. Like, in the story, he dies on Cabrini, on the land.
Legend, yeah.
Yeah, so it is supposed to be, it's not supposed to be some worldwide folklore
in
or something.
Sequel?
It just is a
and okay, maybe it's inappropriate.
Farewell to the Flesh or Day of the Dead, which one
are you
speaking
the
of?
Farewell to the Flesh. Cap. Don't they end up like tracking this back to like I remember before watching this again tonight,
Louisiana
it's
or something like that?
Yeah, it's like New Orleans or something.
It's New Orleans, I believe.
Nolens?
And it's like that's where it actually happened, and I'm like, I thought the legend in the first movie, you know, when we're watching, I'm like, this
he
was...
dies on Cabrini Green.
And they scatter his ashes over
on Cabrini Green.
Oh, no, they change it to the sequels. Because
they were going to film in New Orleans, so...
Well, yeah, like, right. It's like, what's cheaper? New Orleans? Eh, let's change it a little
bit.
We're
not going to Chicago.
but they end up, like, going, like, flashbacks in history. Like, I think they still
remember
go
they
back
do, they
to,
do
this,
that
like,
in part
slave
two.
Era. And they show him getting his... hand sawed off
in New Orleans,
and
New Orleans, or like
I
on a plantation,
probably,
or
something. Like
something which
like
is
that,
weird
because
in this it says it's 1890. He was the son of a like a of a inventor who made like mass producing shoe. And so he was a painter and he was hired to paint the virgin,
the virginal beauty of some guy's daughter. Yeah.
Yeah.
They fell in love and that
she got pregnant and, they cut off his hand and spread him with honey. So the bees sting him to death. Which is cool. That's cool. Yeah. That's a good reason why his name was Candyman. Why was his name Candyman in the story of The Forbidden?
I think he actually had, at one point she says he smelled like candy or something like that. She gets an odor of like cotton candy or something off of the guy. But I think the sweets to the sweet and the fact that there were razor blade chocolates, I think is also in the story, but I could be mixing those two things up. I'm not sure. Yeah, because you're like, well, he should have candy, bags of candy, but the guy doesn't. It's like, what? So he's a slave who's got his hand cut off and has a hook.
The honey, man.
Just covered in honey.
So that's it. Just honey. This movie, at this point, suddenly takes a turn. Like, when the Candyman actually appears, which is a kind of a cool scene because of what they do with his voice.
Very cool scene. Oh, yeah.
He's got a voice that's like omnipresent or something. Yeah.
I think every bad guy should sound like that in every movie. Every movie. It's just that, what was like the first thing he said?
Yeah.
And they tell me blah, 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 blah.
Oh, at the beginning?
Oh, yeah. He does a narration at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's awesome. I don't know what he says.
I just remember it ended with I'll split you from your groin to your gullet.
Yeah. That's,
Clive Barker's flowery prose of how to murder people. Oh,
just
people.
Like, be my victim. You know? It's just like, Jesus.
My victim.
Yeah. But she sees the Candyman in a parking garage, and then it
starts
like
getting woozy.
All of a sudden gets a barn door light situation on her eyes.
Film noir, lighting.
I was telling Travis while we were watching it, I had an anecdote from Bernard Rose.
Bernard.
Apparently used, or had like a hypnotist come in and they hypnotized Virginia Madsen says. For those scenes.
Hypnotized for some of those scenes.
So weird. Yeah. Why would you do that?
Just to give the effect.
Just to get that.
But then they like say these lines.
She's got the line.
I don't know.
500 yard stare.
I have to go.
She does. She's very out of it in those scenes.
She's very
it's kinda
good
cool.
in this movie. You
she's
know,
very
like,
good in this movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, she's.
I don't like her hair, but that's not, you know, here.
That's here.
She seems like an actress who is like better than this material or this type of movie usually. Mm-hmm. So like to have her in it. It's almost the Jodie Foster in Silence of the Lambs kind of thing, where you're like, wow, they got Virginia Madsen for this. I mean, I know I kinda previously...
Well, and
there's
thinking,
a connection between the two as well.
Well, I'm thinking the reason she did this is because, well, like, after they caught the Candyman, that's where, like, the main line to me where it's like, oh, here we go, where she says... Man, imagine how, like, cops never go there. Then when a white woman was attacked, they come... Oh, feel so bad. I'm like, oh, Jesus. I guess we should all just feel so bad. Us horrible white people that you know.
I mean, well, yeah.
But, you know, it's just one of those, like, this is why I'm like, this is the dangerous minds of horror movie, the 90s. It's the white person goes into the urban environment to, like, see, I'm one of you too, or whatever, you know.
You know what else makes this a 90s movie? The smoking.
Ooh.
Smoking like, everywhere.
Oh, dude, every second they're putting a cigarette.
They're smoking.
Are you disturbed that your wife just murdered her best friend in your living room? Sit on the couch and smoke.
Well, that's how you show it. Well, he was very teary.
Yeah, it's
well, I mean, but that goes to what happens in this. You know, it's like reality seems to shift and become aware that this movie is a subjective viewing experience. We're seeing everything from the mind of Helen Lyle.
Right.
You is this how glimpses. You took this?
Well, yeah, no. you get a few glimpses like from like the outside perspective of it to like show that like you look fucking crazy.
It's I would say it's the outside perspective. She just looks crazy to us because, well, Candyman tells her that like,
well, I mean,
oh, people don't believe in me.
All from her point of view. You know what I mean?
I think
we
so.
Never see what actually happens in some of these scenes.
Well, because, that's what I'm saying. We get that.
But we don't have her lost time.
Every now and again.
We don't ever have her lost time.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, so it's subjective her point of view, not objective like the, you know, this
we don't
is
see
what
that
actually
month
happened.
Passing,
like, say, in the scene in the, I mean, the one that, like,
yeah,
that really
okay, I guess,
tweaks
yeah.
with my head is the scene where she's seeing the doctor And yeah, she summons Candyman. Candyman shows up, cuts the guy up the back, yeah. then frees her from her restraints because she's tied down in the she's in an institution chair. At that point.
Well,
and then goes out the window. And it's like, well, what is the objective version of what happened there in reality?
Right. Does the window just break?
How did she get out of the restraints?
How did she get out of the restraints?
Well, she does crawl out the window. That's why like
she has to get out of the restraints to kill the guy to go out the window. If this is all in her head, she's possessed by the, or she sees a Candyman that doesn't exist, because I guess that's what I'm saying with the movie. At this point, it becomes a psychological.
Is she doing it?
Like, thriller. Yeah.
Like we're never looked, because the only time we get to see the other perspective of it is when Candyman is not doing anything. Like, it's the scene where he's floating over her in the bed and then goes under the
bed.
We're just, there's nothing, like, he's not doing anything in that scene where we can be like, somebody else is doing this.
Right.
Like, they can all still be looked at as in her head.
I think it's important to talk about Candyman's motive before we talk about any of this. Candyman, in that parking garage scene where he first shows up, tells her, like, you don't believe in me. You've shaken the foundation that all these people,
my followers,
have, you know, so we need to like start building the story again. I need to like, you know, innocents are going to die. And, but then he starts for some reason wants her to be part of it. Like, that's where well, we'd find this out later, I guess. Like, but yeah, it's like, why does Candyman give a fuck if she joins with him to be part of the urban legend and all this shit? So basically, so then she like pops up in this, she first wakes up in that apartment that was with some woman that lived next door to the woman that was supposedly killed by,
the single mother.
The single mother.
There's a single mother and her baby's dead, her dog's head is cut off, and the woman just wakes up in the bathroom with the door shut. That's what I'm like, so she had to have done it. Candyman had to have possessed her or something, or
that's,
you know,
I mean, I don't think you're ever going to be like, could she have done it? Like, could he have placed her there? Like, is she being possessed? Is she actually doing this stuff? Like,
yeah,
I don't think there's a definitive answer. I think you can go either way on it.
I mean, the other option is what Candyman lays her out, really, brings her over there, kills the dog.
Well, he
steals the baby, which is what I take.
Puts her in the bathroom, covers her with a bunch of blood, or she doesn't have the knife in her hand. And right.
She sees the, which is, where did all that blood come from in the butt? Anyway,
yeah, I mean, I took it as like she actually did it under the guidance of Candyman, and whether he's real or not.
She was hypnotized or whatever. Or you could take it as,
I don't know,
she's been so affected by researching Candyman
that she lost her mind.
Lost her mind.
Went crazy. Or there was some mental illness there that we just were unaware of prior to this. I don't know.
Something. That's why, that's where this movie does lose me, too. I just like, what the fuck?
She does have some stressors in her marriage.
She does.
Oh, that's right.
Candyman because of the ending.
Well, it's definitely Candyman, that's for sure. Right. A fucking dude.
That scene in the apartment where she just, like, wakes up, like, covered in the blanket and pulls it off and runs the blood, and, like, the dog's head sitting in the kitchen. Like, I saw this movie when I was young. Like, that, I think that scene fucked me up. Because I'm like, oh, Jesus. Just waking up in the blood and the dog's head and then the baby's, like, all the blood in there. I'm just like, oh.
You know what fucked me up is when she's in the cop station and you can see her nipples through the bra and it's all bloody. I'm like, this is fucking wrong, dude. And then they're like, lift up the left breast. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. This is a confusing scene for me as a young child.
I was
like 13, 14 when this came out. I'm like, holy shit. It's so rare I see boobs and
it's so rare that the main character in a horror movie, a female main character in a horror movie, actually is naked or topless or exposed as much as Virginia Madsen is in this movie. And granted, it's only like two scenes. She's in a bathtub.
Yep,
she's in a bath.
And then the scene.
Usually, you just don't see like your like the lead actress. You know, like,
and usually, they go about.
I would say we're
like not going to show
non-sexualized like nudity.
I mean, you know, just, I would say
it's like slice of life kind of stuff.
I say unknown actors, we would definitely see more boobs in a main actor in a horror movie. It's just so rare that somebody that's kind of, I don't know, what you call her well known. I don't know. Where maybe not.
That may have been after, you know, Candyman.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think boobs are all over horror movies.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but usually it's like the friend or something like that. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Usually, like your main character gets home from a day after school, she changes her shirt for some reason because you got to get out of your school clothes and get into your play clothes, I guess.
Yeah.
And then you continue the adventure. You just got to get home first, show your boobs to the closet.
Yeah.
See, that's what's like. I always, for some reason, popped in my head like Dario Dawson.
What's Rosario?
No. No, it's
In this movie?
No. In the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the most recent one.
Dario.
Dario. What's her name?
Dario.
Her last name's Dario. Yeah, but she's like the main character, somebody and there was like no boob in that. Like. I don't know where I was going with that, but
we're soft nowadays.
Bit, I mean, maybe, but you get a little bit like but no boob in that one. Yeah. Like, it's not always the thing. But
we make
like,
soft
it's
horror.
It's surprising that it happened in this movie, like right, that. Yeah, like that's what I'm going for.
And an older actor. Well, I mean, what? She's still probably in her 20s.
Probably
30s, maybe 30.
This
Alexandra Daddario.
Definitely
Thank
30s.
You. There it is. Jesus.
But going to Candyman's motive, I guess, like the myth of Candyman, like the character, he's this guy who exists without a physical corporeal body or something. He exists as myth, as writing on the wall, as the whisper in the classroom, all this stuff, which sounds really cool. But he was obliged to come because you made people doubt me.
Right.
And the first scene, I was telling Travis to get like the scene where he shows up in the parking garage. I think the first thing he does is like inhale. He walks up and he's like, and I'm like, oh my God, this is like the first time this guy has been alive in God knows how long. He just made himself somehow a physical being. And his whole trajectory is to claim a victim and then be burned in the fire and go back to living in the in the whispers, I guess.
Right.
So, you know.
Well, no, he wanted her with him because this kind of has that pseudo Dracula like. Dun dun dun!
Yeah,
you're a descendant of the white woman that I like. So that would like make him like his niece, his like great great grandniece. Which way? Whatever. 1890.
It's been a long time. That theme continues in the later movies. It's like you're from the woman that I loved way back when. It's like, oh, all right.
Weird.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not weird.
Yeah, those scenes. See, that's the thing. Like now that I'm thinking about it on this watch, I'm like, I blank those out because I think they
don't
conform
do that.
To my world.
Now I know why you
movie.
Like The Force Awakens.
Yes. You know, the idea that the. He distracted me because Travis is crazy. He doesn't like the voice. So everybody has their own opinion.
Well, because I don't get the blank out parts of movies. Yeah, so I had to watch that whole movie.
It was always Helen Graffiti. Yeah. I mean, I guess you can take it as.
Well, because why else?
If it is her psychology writing this, she somehow knows that she's the killer. So it's always been you,
which
Helen.
Is a cool way to take it.
Is her saying, you've always been the killer.
Yeah, you've been the killer.
I'm going to say this guy's a bad director.
But the flip
side. I can see like where that's coming from, but like, I don't know. This movie just gives you too much to be like,
well, the
Candyman's
flip side
real.
Is what, that Candyman is real and she is somehow the reincarnation or something of the girl that he was in love with.
Right.
Well, she would be, she
like,
was
she
the
was
white girl was pregnant.
Mantle.
The white girl was pregnant when Candyman was originally killed, so you would assume that that's the descendant, right? No?
I don't think it's the descendant. I don't know. I take it as like somebody he's finally found to take the place.
But why? But see,
I don't
that's
know.
Why.
I don't know.
It's because that's his descendant. It's because it's that's why.
But that's why you
right
get the
when
old
he meets
picture.
Her. That's right when he meets her. I mean, that's the whole point of when she looks at the white girl in the. In the urban graffiti montage of his origin, that's her realizing, well, I'm the descendant of his whatever,
his woman from way back
virgin,
which is
model, whatever.
I mean, that's,
and that's why he wants her to merge with him. He wants her to merge. He wants her to merge with his story. That's why he's like, I'm going to make you the killer of all these things. That way people are going to start talking about Helen. This is what she did. This is going to get her story going. That way she could join him in this immortal being or whatever. What did he say? Living without being or something like that. Like when you, because that's why he's convincing her. You need to know what it's like. wait till you feel what it's like to exist without existing on the lips of everybody. Yeah. And it's because he wants his old flame to join him in death. That way it completes something, the ghost story, right? No, it completes the ghost story.
It makes me wonder, too, like, how many times Candyman has actually appeared as a flesh and blood.
I think that's four times, guys. I think that's...
Yeah? Because I was like, maybe...
No, I was talking about Candyman. How many times he said Candyman? Oh, yeah. Sorry.
No, yeah. But, I mean, how many times he's actually appeared? It's like, maybe he never has. Maybe this is the first and only time that he has. And so his first time back is like,
right.
I've existed since my death.
Legend has been good up until this point.
And you fucked it up.
You fucked up my legend.
I'm going to come back. And so now we have to do something to keep the fires burning since you, you know, went and ruined it. Yeah. So I'm going to bring you. So you're going to be my victim.
You're going to be part of this.
Yeah. And this is going to add to the legend because of all these Candyman-inspired murders. Because she's probably saying to the press or whoever she's told her doctors, it was the Candyman, not me. So that grows the legend. And so that gets out into the public that this woman was asking about Candyman, then started killing people like Candyman. And then she
took someone's baby.
Yeah.
Like Candyman.
Like Candyman. And then, you know, but then saved the baby. So then she's like the saint kind of to his sinner.
Yeah.
The duo, right?
But
like, yeah, she like grows her own separate legend. Separate yeah.
But that doesn't make sense. We were talking about this earlier. It's like that doesn't make sense because that legend should only be based on the negativity of, oh, Helen. Kill, like, she's the bride of Candyman, you know, she's that's what I think of as Helen, the bride of Candyman. But right,
so what
she, but once she crawls out of the fire with the baby, question, she should be like a saint,
like,
you know,
is, yeah, what
the
is,
entire population of Cabrini Green shows up at her funeral,
right?
So where's the negative story that's fueling her coming back at the end to kill her husband? That's fucking stupid.
Yeah,
it is a tacked on ending. It's got to be like, we need a zinger.
Right, yeah. What is her crawling out of the fire like that? Like you said, it contributes to, it's a positive.
It's a thing. Positive. Why would that be anywhere associated to being able to, like,
so is she,
say your name
like,
in a fucking
now
mirror?
Now, it kind of doesn't make sense because she comes back and kills Trevor, but he's a piece
well,
of
well, he's the only one person in the world that would look at a mirror and go, oh, Helen. Helen.
He's
Helen.
Very perturbed.
Helen. Ah!
Yeah, I've never liked that. Like, I guess two things. Like, I forgot that Candyman dies separate from Helen in the bonfire at the end. And I'm sitting there going, like, why did they do that? Why? I mean, like, because you're like, either...
They know she killed
Candyman. It's like they separate her, but they just bring her back as part of, like, a Candyman-esque legend. It's just like, well, why does he die separate?
But doing that, like, she stabs him with the thing or whatever, and, like, he's like, no, come back. We're going to be entwined together, our story or whatever, which I suppose
it is. It still is in a weird way.
But he dies burning alone. She succumbs, like, after she rescues the baby and escapes. So it was like... Do we have to kill him because, you know, just for the sake of the drama, he's the monster and she's the hero? But then that's negated like a minute later when she reappears to the dead Helen, reappears to her husband Trevor,
what if it's
and
like,
kills him in the bathroom.
What if it's like she's still tied to the Candyman legend, but the people of Cabrini Green know the difference, like know how it ends up, how she like saved the baby and everything, but everybody else doesn't. Like, everybody else still associates her with, like, killing people like Candyman and everything. I think that's the thing. I think she's still associated. Only, like, Cabrini Green people know the truth. The legend still goes with Candyman.
To everybody else.
To everyone else, she is still a killer.
But would you then become fucking Pinhead? Just because, like, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
I think,
like,
well, I think based on
are you
else
no,
is
but saying, are you no? Is that no longer your soul? Like, is Candyman not really Candyman? Is he only a representation of the story? Like, is that not really the soul of the boy that died covered in blah blah? Like, is this not really Helen? Is this really what the story says Helen is? Because if you're not a killer, why would you like? Now I'm a mirror ghost. You know, would you just turn into it because they
that's
said
possible.
It?
Like, it's a physical representation of the history of that story and everything. Like, that's a good question.
It always felt to me, I mean, I know that we're talking about, like, what it could actually mean.
Right.
But when I first saw the movie, I mean, we were coming out of the 80s. And so this felt like, you know, every 80s movie, Freddy, Jason, anybody had the scene at the end that was the zinger that, you know, you'd
since
hope-
Carrie.
Yeah.
This is 70 fucking four. You end your movie with
yeah. And one the, last but game. The idea that, like, in the narrative, I guess, her husband Trevor has been carrying on with this, like, you know, 18-year-old girl, Stacy.
Trevor.
18, whatever.
I fucking hate that name because of this movie. Trevor.
Well, he's played by the dickhead that was
John from, Connor's brother.
Yeah, John Connor's stepdad from Terminator 2.
Or, yeah, Trevor. Sorry, stepdad. But the idea that, like, so he's doing something that's morally wrong, having an affair with his, you know, on his, cheating on his wife. And so this is the comeuppance for his behavior throughout the movie, is for Helen to get revenge on her husband. So she's only really killing him because he cheated on her. I know that really deflates the whole thing.
It does. No, I don't feel like she'd go after other people.
I'm always talking about selfish fucking motives for characters because writers are selfish people and like, or whatever. Most people are selfish people. So they only write things that are like related only to, you know.
Well, I can see that, like, you know, as a writer, you know, you're sitting there and you're like, oh, it like puts the whole thing in balance if Trevor actually does get his just desserts in the end, like a Tales from the Crypt episode or something like that.
Yeah, right.
But kind of feels it like feels it. Unnecessary for this movie. Like, you
well, there was nothing unnecessary about that shirt that his
Stacy little, was wearing at the end.
Jesus Christ. It was just like, dude. I mean,
at the end of the hall, you could see her nipples.
How is she wearing a shirt, but I could see her breast perfectly? It makes no sense at all. Perfectly. I was like, I love that shirt.
Like, it's, that like, material. It's like science is breaking down right now. I could see everything.
Science is
yeah. Poor Trevor. I mean, I kind of, you know, it's like you.
I don't feel bad if he got that a few times. I'm like, you know what? Well, live the good life. Live the good life.
We assume that he's been cheating, you know, prior to, you know, the actual the like, realization that, like, he's moved in with
his
her.
Wife is stealing his fucking, like, his class is about folklore. And she's like, I know what my thesis is about, folklore. Oh, imagine that, bitch. You know, I'm just and then at that dinner, she's like, I'm going to bury you to his, like, his colleague. And he's like, bury me? Do you even know the story of Candyman?
Yeah.
You don't even know the story of Candyman.
She read the paper 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's like, she is kind of a dick in a weird way. It's like, she's trying to, like.
So she wants to prove something, but you're just like, you need to, like, pick where you want to, like, start insulting people, because he's got a little something
as long
up
as
on
they're
you.
A man.
Well, that's what I've always found interesting about this character, is that she's not entirely likable. I mean, like, in the way that, like, we would write, you know, characters, it seems like now, it's like she's got these rough edges. I think it's her hubris,
probably,
kind of, in a lot of ways, like, you know. You know,
she's got the balls to go into Cabrini Green.
Right. You could say it's the balls or she's just stupid. There's characters telling her to her face, like, you are just plain crazy from coming in here, for coming in here by yourself. This is a little kid talking to her. Yeah. It's like, you're crazy. This is a dangerous place.
That's what
her
they
friend
said
is
to
like,
Michelle
this is
Pfeiffer.
A dangerous place. And she's like, I don't care. I'm going in there. I'm single-minded. There's this thing that I want and I'm going to get it. And I don't care what I have to do to get it. You know, it's like it that kind of makes her.
I'm telling you.
It's like she deserves almost in some cosmic way.
That's people telling a white upper class character, it's too dangerous for you to deal with these lower class urban people. And she's like, I don't care. I care about people. So I'm going to find out for sure.
Well, it makes her seem extremely naive in some ways, then, I suppose. It's like she's got courage without like smarts. Yeah. She's got the drive and the ambition, but it's like you're doing this at the cost of your own safety. It's like anybody could have told you this is a bad situation to be looking into, and you end up bringing this. I mean, we're saying both the physical thing of going to Cabrini Green and getting assaulted and the, you know, dabbling in the forces. You
I
know,
think that makes a good character. Though. That's like alone. What I imagine a Lois Lane character would be.
Yeah,
you know, someone that's very going up against rough characters to get the truth.
But the other
thing out there, because that's why she's going to bury this professor dude, right? Is like he may know the story, but he didn't like bother to dig deep enough. Like everyone's too scared to go around the scary like gangster people to investigate what happened in Cabrini Green. Where is this Candyman myth coming from?
I mean, I guess the biggest thing that she gets out of that, her big scoop, is that she sees the Candyman's lair, at least the antechamber, on the first visit. Ruthie Jean's apartment has been turned into this kind of shrine to Candyman,
right,
with the big mural on the wall and graffiti.
We were talking how, like, Child's Play is the other modern-day Chicago horror movie, and it also has the character's origins graffitied in his apartment. It's like, so that's like that's just like the urban horror thing to do is spray paint the story thus so far.
That's how you know it's an inner city story.
Yeah, graffiti. It's an inner graffiti.
Yeah.
And that we don't know Candyman's actually doing it. We thought it was like other, but they said Candyman's a painter.
Well, once we actually, she so finds the actual layer. Right. Where she right. goes
There's
upstairs.
A layer like above.
Yeah, that I think is like he right. painted that.
He's
like
been hanging out. That's sleeping like, on a piano, a grand piano upstairs.
I do love that. That scene of her going through the wall and there's that big painting of Candyman's mouth. When I was a kid, that's cool. That fucking really, like...
It really was, like...
Oh, it was really creepy when I was a kid. Like, yeah. Now the whole movie's a lot brighter than I, you know, than sure. you recall it, but...
But yeah, that was just like, ooh. Like, striking imagery in this movie has stayed with me. Especially that kid, when they're talking about, the, like, the kid who, you know, got it cut off in the bathroom and everything. Like, that always stuck with me. It's like, that's a... Like, the showing a kid, like... In that situation in the movie, I'm like, whoa.
Once again, she imagined that as happening in the 70s, yep. even though...
Well, maybe.
When she's... Well, that's why I'm thinking...
The guy's got like a zoot suit on. Well,
but that's why I'm thinking
sorry.
About... that's why I'm thinking these are her... Those are her idea. Like, when she hears these stories,
her interpretation,
everything no. from an urban myth comes from, oh, it's the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. So she's imagining these past things. That's why she saw... Ted Raimi is a 50s greaser guy. She saw this story as a 70s guy. But then when she gets arrested, the guy says, yeah, that's the Candyman that killed the girl and the boy. So we know, well, no, that's a modern day thing. That handicapped kid dying is a modern day story. It didn't take place in the 70s. But this fucking movie doesn't like... It just doesn't like nail that home that like...
Is it...
These are what... if when you get told an urban legend, you have this... You have a mental picture of like, oh, it started in this era, and like, you know, she's yeah. placing all this, even though these are right. modern day things happening. Or,
well, do you think that was on purpose? Because I think it like,
unless they forgot in the script, like shit, you wrote in that that Candyman killed the boy, and then we filmed the fucking backflash from the
70s.
Right. Shut
I
up.
I feel it, it's it. And this may be, this all definitely be after the fact, but it kind of gives, it could give like, it gives something to that whole like mythos of this. Like they, that, that it did happen recently, but that they kind of like shoot the flashbacks in sort of a more,
nostalgic?
Yeah, more nostalgic.
I mean, that's why I think like, it's got to be
a tone.
It gives the yeah.
Well, that's
like,
why it's got to be Helen's
broader like legend to it.
It's got to be Helen's like imagination. Helen's imagining this story taking the story Helen is being told. She's imagining, well, this would take place in the 70s cuz
maybe.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Urban legends never happen in your time and day.
Well, that's
right?
What,
they're always
that's
something
what,
that happens
they,
in the past.
That's what I'm saying, but I think they're doing that on purpose to kind of get that point across.
Well,
maybe?
For sure, but I don't think this movie tells you that. Like, this movie would have you believe that...
Yeah, it took place
in
long time
It took
time
place
ago.
In the 70s, not
right.
that this
and
is
the
her idea of
right.
where it took place.
Yeah.
I mean, I got it just because
right.
fucking whatever. You gotta make something of this movie, and you're like... Well, they just mentioned the boy. That didn't happen in the 70s, so this must be why. Unless I said, unless they fucking forgot.
Yeah.
That's our only mistake. It's having that one black detective say, yep, she killed the girl and the boy. Oh,
yeah. See, I think like some of those scenes are like, I mean, as far as like the directing goes, fairly well done because it does create a sense of... like distortion or disorientation. Yeah. Like, you know, she wakes up all of a sudden and like these murders have happened and you're like, what in the fuck? And there's this lost time. And it really does make her out to be like a crazy person. Yeah. And that was like, I think what was unique about this movie at that period of time, as we moved into the 90s, we went out of the 80s slasher thing into the psychological horror movie. And like, I don't know what happened or what was going on at the time, but you had, I mean, was it the arrest of like,
drugs.
Well, I mean, as far as like the hand that rocks the cradle.
Yeah.
It was, there's all these like
thrillers.
Yeah.
Thrillers
final analysis
became
where
the,
where like yeah, it was thrillers where psychologists were, or psychiatrists were the protagonists.
Cape Fear. When was Cape Fear remake?
91. What was it? Bruce Willis movie, The Color of Night? He was a psychiatrist.
Yeah, Color of Night.
You know, it's like Final Analysis. Richard
Dead
Fears
Calm.
Is
I love
a psychiatrist.
Dead Calm.
It's like, so psychiatrists are the main characters wandering through this like psychological landscape where there's a, well, primal fear. You know, I mean, they're all kind of, it's the psychological
Silence
decade.
Of the Lambs we talked about. Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, which directly predated this.
Directly, yeah, 1 year earlier. And like I said, there's a connection.
What's that?
Cassie Lemons plays Clarice Starling's friend and also fellow, I think, fellow cadet at the thing. And she's Bernadette in this movie.
Yeah.
Bernadette. I was watching this movie. I'm like, is that fucking her?
You said that earlier. And I'm like, I can't even think of what it is. And it was boom.
And on movie posters that have insects on faces, they're very similar. Like, do you see, like,
kind
of similar.
They're like, they're pitching this on the back of the box as the scariest movie since The Silence of the Lambs. I mean,
last year.
But it seemed
one
like
year before,
at least even at the time, you know. I'll say that from a wrap up. All right, so
still pretty Pinhead, though. As much as they tried to go psychological, they went too Pinhead.
Because they created a movie monster.
They created a movie monster.
But it always seems like the great movie monsters, you don't know they're a movie monster until, like, you know, until a few years afterwards. Yeah. It's like you see it and you're like, well, he's not like Freddy, and he's not like Jason, and he's not like Chucky, but those guys weren't like the guy before them.
But he's exactly like Pinhead. I loved Candyman just because he's exactly like, that's what I do like about this movie. When Candyman's talking, he's fucking like Pinhead. It's scary.
Yeah.
Come on, be my victim,
right?
And all that
you
shit.
Have
everything
some
about
some type of object, in this case a mirror, in the other case a puzzle box, that summons a being from
that
another
just talks.
Dimension.
Does Pinhead monologue a lot?
That's what Pinhead. Oh, you haven't seen fucking Hellraiser?
No, I've seen like the first two. But it's been a long time.
Oh, that's all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe parts
like
of like Bloodlines and the.
We
thing,
have such
know.
Sights
like, no, it's
to
been a
show you.
Long time.
Still hungry, ready for something that screams.
There's lots of talk of
long
flesh.
Time.
Oh, dude, pain.
Oh, yeah.
You know nothing of the word
Isn't there
pain.
A dude that's got, like, CDs coming out of his mouth?
Pain has a face.
Yeah.
Allow me to show it to you.
Yes.
I love Hellraiser, Hell on Earth. Awesome. I had to get that out there.
All right.
I feel better now.
Good? You feel?
I actually dated the cousin of the CD Cenobite.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Not that means anything to
anybody.
But it makes me want to buy the. I saw the CD Cenobite toy the other day. I was like, I want to buy that, man. Just
that's the one that's
like,
most memorable to me for some reason.
He was awesome.
He was. I like it.
I like Cenobites. I don't care what you know. Anyway,
so this movie was followed by two sequels. There's Candyman Farewell to the Flesh and Candyman Day of the Dead.
Good title.
Farewell to the Flesh went to theaters. Mm. I saw it.
Did you see it in the theaters?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I saw this and the second one.
I mean, I can understand after seeing this, be like, all right, let's see what the second one's got to offer.
I don't even know if I would
I
see
imagine
the
you did not.
I can't recall if I ever
you are
finished
correct.
It.
Yeah. I did not really like the second one. Like, even,
second
like,
or third.
But
like,
the second one, the thing that I remember the most from it, at least that I did. So I saw it in the
was
theater.
Was the Playboy Playmate they cast in the main role?
Was she? I don't remember her.
I think in one of them it was.
I don't think it was that. Oh, Donna DeArco was in.
Yeah, Donna DeArco. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Day of the Dead. Yeah. But the second one, I remember it having a mood, and it was like it had that very Southern Gothic New Orleans flavor to it.
Yes.
Which was really cool. I saw it recently because it was on the Bounce Network, which of course it's going to be because it's got Tony Todd in it.
Tony Todd.
And it was like
it's a direct ticket to Bounce.
Well, this is worse than I thought it was. They kill off Artie or whatever, the professor, in like the very first scene, it seems to me. He's in New Orleans giving some speech, you know, or a class about Candyman.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And then Candyman shows up and kills him, and then credits Candyman, Farewell to the Flesh.
Yeah. Then it becomes like a serial killer movie.
Yeah, well, it's somehow like in her, this woman's family is the house where he, whatever. It's a relation or something.
Yeah, dude. Dracula all over this movie.
That movie, ironically, directed by Bill Condon, he went on to do Gods and Monsters. There's something
movie,
else he did before he did Twilight, Breaking Dawn, Part 1 and Part 2.
Oh, my God. So his career's over. That's what
Well, he's
you're
got
saying.
A better career than Bernard Rose, or
Bernard. Maybe he just went back to England and did BBC shows.
Probably. Isn't that where they all go? Like
back
BBC
to England?
Heaven?
Going back to England.
The guy who directed the third one.
We're making Shakespeare. Fuck this Candyman 3 shit.
Yeah. Well, that was back in the days when you could actually direct movies that went to theaters. Now they go directly.
Now everything's like VOD.
Like Candyman 3.
Because
anybody
of all
seen
these
Candyman
horror movies.
3?
No.
I've seen them all, yes.
What the?
I saw Candyman 3.
I am not proud of it, but I've seen
it. Yeah,
it
was not good. Well,
it's not good.
Dude, Candyman to me is one of like, this is the signifiers of like the end of horror. Like, it's over. All that fun you had, all that like, goodbye. We turned all the lights on and sent the monsters home.
It's not a fun movie.
A lot of
it's not a fun movie.
Fun daytime.
And what interests me about it is not part of the movie, really. I mean, I like when Candyman shows up and talks. Like I said, that's Pinhead, dude. It's all, everything he does is the shit. Open his jacket, let me see bees. It's like fucking scary.
Bees, all the bees in all everybody's mouths and on the faces. Oh.
They're trying to figure out how they did that.
Oh, they put like, everything's real. Well, they just had a mouth guard so it wouldn't go down his throat.
But what's the stuffer from stinging his lips?
He got like, stung. No, it says like he got stung.
So those were like full stinger bees.
They were bred specifically for this movie, but they are
nice bees. They're Tony Todd.
They're
Todd
like
bees.
12 hours old.
Oh,
so that they
babies.
Can they look like full grown bees, but their stingers won't have like a very
so they're
big
really
impact
fluffy.
Or at all. They're very very fluffy. Very, yeah, but yeah, that's they're very young bees, so they can look old enough but not do damage. He's been stung plenty of times doing the three movies, but yeah, very young bees. Virginia Madsen is allergic to bees. So
what?
Like, but they so they say they had like an ambulance on set ready to go, but everybody's covered in bees in this movie.
Yeah.
He's got bees coming out of his mouth.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
They're coming out of his mouth.
It's very scary.
Yeah.
No,
and
even her, she's
real.
Like,
yeah. I don't. Fuck. No. Is that one of those things you just tell your people like, no, I can do it. I thought you were allergic. No. What? No, I
right.
can do it. Is there
not a chance. Yeah. Like if like maybe if I'm not allergic, maybe like all right, if they're just gonna like be on me, maybe. But if I'm allergic, I'm like fuck no,
yeah.
I'm not taking that chance.
Right.
No.
Kind of wild.
But yeah, real.
But
just
I'm sure
all
like
in his mouth.
I'm
yeah.
sure like the paramedics have whatever they need to inject them with, like
right
there. Right.
Just,
so it'd be just
oh,
like
I'm
a
sure
5 minute like there you go.
Yeah.
Right.
Brave,
still.
Brave choice by
yeah.
sure, by Virginia Ooh. Madsen.
No, are we? You. So is that Candyman?
I think that's Candyman. Sean,
Candyman.
Candyman.
Colin,
right.
Candyman.
There it is.
I think that's Candyman. All right. So now we're gonna summon Igor. Igor, where art thou, sir?
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
Well, thank you, Igor.
Is that a new shirt, Igor? I like it. Good color on you.
No, I think we just washed it. I don't think that's
really? New. Like, you got the grime off it? Like, oh, Jesus.
I think we did the best.
It's like a 10-year-old shirt. Uh-huh. Well, it looks good on you, Igor. Thank you.
Well, Igor has brought the mailbag covered in his signature slime. Okay, Oof. So, again, you can write to us on Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show or Twitter @SatFreakShow. So we've got comments about our last three movies. So about Candyman, Babette Georgie writes in and says, where was the movie filmed? Those ghetto sets, were they really abandoned projects or just sets?
It was
Cabrini Green.
All right.
But permission from the gangstos.
They took a sniper shot to the production van on the last day, but...
Oh, that's what happened. I thought I heard it the other way around, that they hired snipers.
Oh, no. Apparently, like, on one of the last days, there was, like, a sniper shot into the production van. Nobody was hurt, but, yeah, there was... It was
a sniper shot,
yeah,
to me, in, like, gangland, just means somebody pointed the gun and pulled the trigger. Right. I don't know.
A
sniper shot. They were up high.
Like, yeah. From 10 feet away, he's got really good aim. That's a sniper shot.
Well, we should be clear. That's the exteriors. The interiors
yes.
were actually constructed on a soundstage. You can tell because of the lighting is
yeah.
way up in the... Yeah.
Way high. And you
so, could, interiors. But that production right. designer in this movie knew his grime.
Oh, boy, did he. Oh. Bothers
does
me
not
to this
think
day.
Highly of urban
Bothers
area.
Me to this day.
G-Money writes in and
G-Money.
Says... One is good, two is great as well, but I use great loosely. One has the best story and acting, but two and some of three have undoundoubtedly better and gorier effects.
Huh.
Is Candyman?
Yeah, Candyman.
Oh, geez.
All three make for a great marathon. Tony Todd is and always will be the Candyman in
good.
Any film he's in.
He is the Candyman.
He's very good.
Well, he's also Death in
he is death.
Final Destination.
He is. That's
is
a good,
he?
That was a
three
good
of those movies, he's Death. Well,
Weird.
He's a coroner. But he speaks for death.
He's death. Right?
Crazy.
But he's good in that role.
He's good in anything.
He's good in that.
Tony Todd's a good actor.
Tony Todd's good.
He's a scary guy. Yeah. Intimidating.
Did you see him in Hatchet?
Nope.
No,
I would have to watch Hatchet again.
I would have to watch Hatchet.
It's horrible.
I mean, that's unfortunately where the guy is right now. Now he's like basically because he's one of
he's making his money. He's making his money.
Guys. He shows up in, you know, whenever they do the, like, let's get Kane Hodder and Robert Englund and Tony Todd.
You
got to
get Tony Todd.
Yeah.
But he had his role. He was in The Crow. He was one of the main bad guys in The Crow. So, I mean, he's been in major movies.
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
He's
I don't know him.
Fucking Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
Have we forgotten about that?
Yeah.
The 90s version?
Yeah.
Tom Savini. Possibly. Yeah, I mean, I love, I mean, Candyman's good, but possibly my favorite Tony Todd role. Come on.
Night of the Living Dead?
Yeah. I love him. For sure. I love him in that role.
I suppose, right? He gets to actually.
I rarely watch the 90s Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, I like that.
The
movie.
60s version is good.
I like that one too, but I like the 90s version.
All right, about Lemora, A Child's Tale.
Oh, don't say it.
Dom Cree writes in and says, a massacre at Central High mention. That's my first VHS horror rental ever. Thank that movie for shaping my terrible and uninformed opinions on the films you review. I think that's because Rainbow Smith was in Massacre at Central High.
And
we didn't mention it. We haven't actually seen it.
We haven't seen it.
Yeah, no. You're ahead of us on this game, Dom. So, yeah.
All right, Dom.
And about Scream 2, G-Money again writes in. He G-Money? Says, so he says he saw the girl in the photograph this weekend. This is a new movie, it was the last movie produced by Wes Craven before he died.
I've heard about this.
He says it's very Craven-esque with the brutality and how they made a human appear more monster-like without makeup. I haven't seen it, though.
Ooh.
He says, is there any thought on new or recent films in theaters or just new or streaming to watch? What's your favorite werewolf films?
I love Bad Moon.
Not Wolf Cop.
Not Wolf Cop. Bad, I mean, I think Bad Moon's like, I also kind of like Werewolf Hunter. It was the one with Julian Sands where it's kind of based on the first American trial of werewolfism. Was it American trial or French?
Yeah, it's somewhere over, it's European. Somewhere. Yeah. I can't remember.
Where. Anyway, that's a pretty good werewolf movie.
Yeah.
But they're hard to come by.
Sean?
Werewolf movies are not my thing. I always...
I don't think they're movies things.
just like, I'm never... fucking... I don't know. It's never like... It's never ever been scary because it's a werewolf movie. And the effects never like... never ever, nothing's ever looked real to me. I like American Werewolf in Paris.
What?
I think you messed this up.
My heart fucking skipped a goddamn beat right
there. Other one, sorry. London. My bad.
Why?
Sorry.
Why?
Mostly for the effects, like, of, what's his name? The guy who dies early in the beginning.
Griffin Dunne.
Yeah.
Jack.
Yeah, for who shows up throughout the movie. Like, that's, like, his part is, like, fucking awesome, how he slowly degrades throughout the movie. That's good.
The whole script,
it's a very sharp, funny movie.
Oh, my God.
It really is.
It's the best.
I like, I don't know, I don't have much experience with just that. I would go with that one.
Cause
they don't do well for me.
I like werewolf movies, Sean. I like them.
I know you do. I like them a lot. I like the original Wolfman.
I like the remake of the Wolfman. I like American Werewolf, The Howling. I kind of like the Wolfman and the Monster Squad.
I don't like that.
Wolfman's Got Nards.
Yeah, the Wolfman's Got Nards.
Wolfman's
He's
got
a pretty
Nards.
Cool looking werewolf. I like Ginger Snaps. I'm trying to think of
Ginger
good,
Snaps.
Like
the first Ginger one, not Snaps the like five good. After it, but I like Ginger Snaps.
Good werewolf creature design.
Creature design.
Dude, Bad Moon. I swear to God, Bad Moon has like one of the best werewolves.
What about
werewolves?
Wolf?
Yeah,
come
it's
on.
A bad movie.
You know, well,
I'm sure it is.
Oh, you mean he's got yellow eyes and just fucking bushy sideburns?
Yeah,
like,
I kind of like that Nicholson did it. Like, I kind of like that. I'm okay with that movie.
I kind of like that movie.
I'm okay with that movie.
I like the ending. But Bad Moon.
Oh, you mean where the werewolf fights the other werewolf?
Where she's a werewolf at the end?
Well,
everybody's a werewolf.
Yeah.
Because that's how you end a Hollywood movie, even the Wolfman remake. Like, two werewolves. Never saw that coming.
Mm-hmm. That's not always a bad thing.
It's a horrible thing.
You just gotta go with it.
When you say, well, who's the monster gonna fight? You're like, you gotta walk out of the office. Like, nobody. The monster should kill people. Then, like, sort of person or authority figure kills the monster. Well, monsters don't need to fight other monsters.
But when they do, it can be awesome. All right, so final thoughts on Candyman.
You.
Colin, what are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts. I think this is a very smart adult horror movie. It stars adults. It's, you know, it's like...
We never talked about the score.
Oh, shit.
Score is...
I'll talk about it. Philip Glass. Who you may know from Quiet Scotty. No?
Did you say an English word? Like, what is...
It's an, a Swahili word.
Swahili.
He also did the... If you saw Dracula, the 1931 Bela Lugosi Dracula with the score by the performed by the Kronos Quartet, that was written by Philip Glass. But he's a...
Oh, shit. How old is he?
No, he didn't. That was in the 2000s when they re-released it.
Oh, when they re-released it with a new score. I'm how old is this guy?
If you saw Watchmen, the scene on Mars is scored to a piece that he did for Quiet Scotty, the movie. It was his life in motion. So, yeah, but he maintains that he was duped into doing
He does.
This soundtrack.
He kind of disowned it for a long time until 15 years ago.
Yeah, I swear to God that score, when it goes...
That's Hook.
Is that?
No, that's fucking Home Alone.
Or Home Alone. Yeah, that's something.
It sounds familiar. That, like, it just reminds me of it really badly. I think it's great.
But he has since come around, or at least maybe the money's come around. The money's come around. But he's, like, he's, you know, allowed it to be released and everything.
Yeah, he said he was, like, duped, like, Bernard Rose... convince him that this type of movie, you know, it wasn't a slasher movie. It was an art film, or it was an
independent more prestige. Yeah, he was disappointed with the final product.
Yeah. But it's like, I think it was, Bernard Rose to me doesn't seem like he's a horror guy. Made a horror movie, which is like, that's what makes it interesting in some ways. Like, he's removed from the genre, so he could actually like look at it differently and do something where, I mean, you know, like I said before, to me, this did usher in the era of the psychological horror movie, the psychological slasher, whatever. It was, this is what, you know, the beginning of what defined the 90s.
Sliver.
For me, anyway. Yeah. As far as like what the horror movies were. Well, the first one was Jacob's Ladder. I'm like, this is a fucking, now we're in the 90s.
It's the 90s.
This is very different. We've left Freddy, Jason, and all the Dr. Giggles behind. And,
no, Dr. Giggles was in the 90s.
Oh, that's right. He was.
Dr. Giggles.
A latecomer.
Well, the 90s was psychological, but the movie monsters, they all became Freddy. They all became the tug-in-cheek, like Leprechaun.
Yeah.
Everything was like, does he make jokes?
Yeah. Everything cool. Went to that level. Yep.
And then in the 90s, we had to understand why they did what they did. And in the case of Scream, was kind of spitting in the face of that with the motive is because it's the millennium.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love the performances. It just, it feels like they were actually trying to make a legit, like, you know, movie here. It wasn't like exploitation. They're actually going after something, I think. And, I think it's successful. The shock scares when I saw it in the theater, I remember they worked on me because of the way he cuts. It's the cutting that makes them work, where you know, no one's there. And then all of a sudden you cut and like, you know, to a new angle and something's happening and accompanied by the loud noise.
Well, even when he like goes out the window, I mean, that cut is almost right on. I mean, his body in movement almost. Yeah. It's just like, Jesus.
It's almost subliminal. Like you saw it, but it like happened so fast. Right. And
which works.
It's exciting.
Like the story they're getting across being subliminal. Like,
I heartily recommend The Candyman. I think it stands up as one of the best horror movies of the 1990s, a prime example of the genre. Although it's like, you know, if you weren't into horror and you watched it, would the disorienting effect of it like lose you and you'd just be like, fuck this, you know, I don't understand what's going on here. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe at the end.
It's not... It still seems like it's not, it doesn't like shatter the narrative in a way that you can't understand what's happening. You know, I think it's still like, you know, as long as you ride that line of, you know, she's actually doing this with this, you know, imagined or not, you know, figure directing her moves, then, you know, everything, even though you're missing time in those gaps, you can still understand what happened. She went up there and fucking stabbed somebody, you know, that's yes. Candyman. Yes.
So I would say that it does hinder the movie, what you were just saying about how the psychological portion of it. Because I like this movie leading up to I mean, I swear to God, this movie, almost right where that edits to where she wakes up in the bathroom of the that lady in Cabrini Green, like, that is where I stop liking this movie, like, 100%. Because it just stops making... It's not... I mean, I know it's not trying to make sense. It's trying to be, like, discombobulating and all this shit, but, like, I just don't... Like, I don't know. I just... I don't see why... I don't know. Yeah, when you watch the movie through, you're like, okay, this is why Candyman wanted her to be part of the legend. But until you know that at the end, it's just like, okay, this doesn't fucking make any sense. Why don't he just kill her? Why don't he just... It just doesn't make sense. He's too vague about what he's doing. I also think, I mean, fuck, any vampire movie that uses the you're a descendant of the woman I loved, I fucking just hate that story. I hate it to my core. I'm so bored with the, like, I'm surprised Candyman didn't have a, well, he did have a fucking painting of her.
There was.
Yeah, there was, like, a painting of her just like every fucking,
end credits, there's a big painting of her.
I think Fright Night's the only movie I will still watch where, like, there's a painting of my lost beloved or whatever.
She looks just like this lesbian I know right
this
here.
This lesbian. Imagine that shit. So, I don't know. It does lose me because, like, Candyman is something to be feared in the beginning of the movie. Then later in the movie, he just... We don't even know if he cuts the dog's head off. He just takes a baby. And it's just like, God, you'd imagine that if this guy has this much power, I mean, maybe he only has that power over her because it's his like fucking great, great, great granddaughter or whatever the fuck. Maybe that's the only reason he has any sort of suggestion over her. Because
you're
you're
still getting the idea that she's a great, great.
Because it's in the painting. When she looks at the paint, it was always used, Helen. She looks at the painting of them cutting his hand off. There's the white woman in the picture, dude. Come on.
It's the end of the Shining thing where, like,
it's her.
Always you, that's, Jack. You know, you were always the caretaker here.
Right.
But it's her. Yeah.
It feels like the film does. For sure. Go this is a.
Because I've always known that. When I was watching this tonight, like, I'm pretty sure this story's about how she's a relative of Candyman.
And that's why you gotta come over to my view here.
No. You don't even watch the movie.
But they continue that theme in the other movies as well. Like, I know we have to watch this as its own thing, but they do. Because
that's the fucking story. Colin blocks out things he doesn't like in movies, and that's why he's like, I like the Wolfman remake.
I didn't like the end of Candyman, just the very end. But the. It was always you, Helen. If you see it as, like, that's her confessing
herself.
If
you're choosing to see it like
that,
then
she's not a descendant.
Just knowing movies.
The movie's better.
I don't care.
Come on to the
side. It's not the real movie.
Love the Candyman.
You could choose to think of it that way, but that's not the real movie. The movie is telling you that's the descendant of the white... That's why he wants her to be... Well, then why else does he want a random white woman to be part of his fucking story? Why? Because it doesn't make fucking sense, Colin. You don't even have to answer.
She made
because
the
she went looking
kid,
for it.
Yeah, she made the kid.
It still does, but
the congregation.
But that still doesn't mean, like, join me in immortality. That's rewarding her for fucking putting away his what? No, she is.
He's a poetic soul. He loves
it's his relative.
It's more like the one who opposed me. I will make part of the legend. Like,
no,
the
it's
one,
not.
The biggest doubter.
Sure.
The biggest doubter I will bring in as part of it.
Yeah, you don't do
that.
You don't do that. If I'm a vampire and I hate you, I don't make you a vampire. I kill you.
Your biggest doubter, you turn into part of the thing. Like, I think, like, he's trying to strengthen his legend at that point.
Anyway, the point is, I fucking hate when somebody, I just hate when the monster is in love with the ancestor of his beloved. I just fuck, especially when it's his kid. I think that's a new one. Like, it's always been that you're the reincarnated, but it's never been like she was pregnant. That's why they tell you she was pregnant and they kill Candyman. That's specifically why they tell you
she would be a mulatto.
They could have just said, okay, after just because you sleep with one black guy, every single one of us has one black person in our fucking genealogy, and we're not fucking mulattoes, we're still white. There's plenty of you put one black person.
You're a little dark. He's not.
Yeah,
he's not.
But so yeah, that's You know, I mean, if you don't see that as the movie, I'm sorry, you don't know how to read a movie. But
just, we will let the viewers decide.
Yeah, we goddamn
right
will.
In, viewers.
We fucking will.
Yeah, yeah, let us know.
Well,
let
dude,
us know.
He just said the sequels continue that thread, so obviously it has to
it's
be.
It's like the sequel's invented, though. That, okay. is, that is the main
that's the
story
biggest stretch.
Of Candyman Farewell to the Flesh.
It's well, that, almost like, that's but, what I'm saying. It's, it was always meant to be that way.
Or the sequels picked up on that theme and just took that and ran with that.
Like, I see what you're saying, but that's what I'm saying. This movie fails to be that psychological thing that you're talking about. It tries to throw the viewer off in a weird way, but it fails. It just right. totally lets you know that Pinhead's here. I keep, you know, I always call him Pinhead. He's Black Pinhead. I think he's cool as fuck. Cool as fuck. I would totally own a Candyman toy. Very scary guy.
Are you a fan of Bones?
The, but that's my problem is that
Snoop Dogg.
No, I'm not. At all. But that's my problem with this movie is that it's about a monster dealing with his own family drama. And I always, you know, that's my problem when I feel like a story is too, like, self-contained. Like, if it's this, like, oh, it's this urban myth. And, like, I just didn't get enough of Candyman doing what he does, I suppose, right? Everything just happens because she makes people forget it, or which how strong would it was it anyway? That's why I see that also doesn't make fucking sense. How it's like a mainly a Cabrini Gray thing, but then this white chick in the college has the 1950s story. So it's like, well,
that was from Indiana. She said it. Happened.
Yeah, right. So just because she like finds one Candyman guy. In Chicago in the 90s, why would that discount stories that are in Indiana, blah, 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 over a matter of a week? Like as soon as they got caught, he comes like, you destroyed my legend. That's why I took, well, Cabrini Green is something that is, or Candyman is something, that's a legend of Cabrini Green, but well,
it's
obviously
it's
like
spread,
but then why thing. Would it, that shouldn't dilute his power just because one building no longer believes in me. You know, the rest of the world should still have their Candyman mythos. There's a lot of holes in this movie. Like, I don't like this movie. I like the idea of this movie. I like the character of Candyman. I like the villain. Like, I'm always talking about how they've always fucking gone out of their way to try to create these Mickey Mouse villain characters in movies like Hatchet and Wishmaster.
I forgot about Wishmaster.
Yeah, so did
shit.
Everyone else.
There are like five of those movies.
I saw that. Yeah. In the
theater. Oh my so did God. I. And that's why I was like, it's over. It's over. Horror is over.
That's when you're like, when it says Wes Craven presents, you run the other
Well, but
way.
It was written by the guy that wrote every Hellraiser movie except for one. He
you
wrote Wishmaster.
Wes Craven presents They?
Saw
yeah. that in the theater.
No,
was
I did
one
not.
Of the worst
I saw that in the theater.
Oh, dude, I learned a long time ago. You see Wes Craven. Don't even. Just
that
like
Wes
dude.
Craven presents. Although he did do Dracula 2000.
So I do not recommend Candyman. I'm just saying that. I don't recommend it. I think it's cool. Like, it's one of those things where, like, I even just. When I saw this back in the day, I hated. As soon as we go to this psychological angle, I'm like, this movie lost me, man. Like, I see what they're trying to do. This movie doesn't do it, though. It falls short of it.
Says it right there. An effectively eerie psychological chiller.
Yeah. Filled with clever, unusual touches.
Who's that? Rex Reed?
Rex Reed hates everything.
Rex Reed hates everything. Yeah. Leonard Moulton actually liked it. It would appear.
But hated Gremlins. Isn't that weird, Leonard Moulton? I know, right? He gets paid.
He's
weird. He's a weirdo.
That's weird. I don't know. Well, I do know, actually. I see what you're saying about it. Candyman. Like I said, I saw this when I was like, there was like a collection. Like my dad had been like he was definitely a horror movie fan, but he always had like shit on random VHS tapes. Just like
shitty movies.
Just hand labeled like here's this. And I'm just like, oh, Candyman, we're gonna watch this one day. So I saw this movie when I was very young, probably too young to be watching Candyman. But it's
perfect age.
There's an argument for it.
Bloody boobs.
Bloody boobs. That always stood out. But there's always like the imagery of this movie. It's the imagery and the score of this movie and them combined that has always stood out to me in Candyman. And it's always like it's always made me feel uneasy. Like I said earlier, this is not a fun movie in any regard for me. But it's the imagery that like I think draws me back to it.
I do like this movie. I think it's very good. I think, you know, in the, ironically, in the mythology of the movie, I think it can get a little muddled, especially when you get towards the end of the movie. But everything that happens in this movie is always like, it's kind of disturbed me in a way. Like, it's always given me like just, you know, just on like unhappy feelings. But I do like it. Mostly from the imagery and the score. That score does it for me in this movie.
I like the close up on the bees. Seriously,
like, which one?
Like all just of like them. That's all. This whole like movie should have been just like bees and then a voice just being like, "Be my victim." Blah blah blah. It's like I would have bought this movie 100%.
I like the psychological aspect. Because you can go into it being like, is it Candyman? Is she just insane doing all this stuff? Just like the gore of this movie always kind of had an effect on me when her friend just lying dead in the living room, like just like kind of bleached pale because she's lost so much blood. Yeah. Like that has stuck with me
and this is
forever.
Like, and this is before this like movie. Forensics, right? There was like no scientist that could be like,
not at all.
No hook pierced her. There's no murder, like, weapon. The murder weapon. They're just like, you're guilty. Why?
Right.
Because you're in the same building.
Right. Or the fact
she had a knife in her hand.
She did.
But she was murdered with a hook.
Trevor walking in after that whole thing and her just on the ground like, just kind of squirming on the ground with a knife in her hand. Like, it's disturbing imagery in this movie. And that is
you verbally hear about a little kid who gets his penis cut off and flushed down a toilet.
Right. And just that quick imagery of them like swooping through the bathroom and just the blood everywhere. Just like the spatters of blood everywhere in this movie.
And the idea that a child is in jeopardy throughout
that,
the entire.
And that might be a big thing, just like him laying on the ground, and it is a kid.
It's always kids, right? The baby.
It really is. Like, that had a big effect on me.
Of course, the fact that she sees flashes of this kid in Candyman's lair the entire way kind of gives credence to the idea that this is all in her head. Because, of course, she knows he's there. She put him there.
Did she? I definitely recommend this movie.
Let me tell you just one thing before you wrap up. Do the Cabrini Green people deliver an imaginary hook to her funeral? Was that a real hook? That's a real that fucking hook. That's it's not in her head. Candyman's a real dude.
I also like the I like that they didn't make it like a little curved Captain Hook. Like, it's just like a fucking
that's scary as fuck.
Angle, like,
that's scary as fuck. This is the scariest like pimp I've ever seen in a movie.
Like, that shit, like, and it's not nice. It's like jabbed into his fucking severed arm.
With like, a fucking, it's got like two nails.
Right, it's like
to get into his bone.
Get some nails in there. Yeah. Oh!
Like, who? That's what I don't get. Who put the hook on the ghost? It's like, I hear in the story they cut his hand off, but who gave him the hook?
I think they say in the...
They jabbed a hook on him.
Did they?
Yeah, before he died, they jabbed
him. Why would you do that? Let's give this guy a scary weapon before he dies.
That's also nice when they're just like, why would you jab a hook on him? That's weird. And
weird.
And pour honey on him?
That's weird.
Weird. But the design of a lot of stuff in this movie, I really like. It's very grimy. It's very, like, I don't know if... Like, I wasn't aware that, like, Chicago was that close to me when I was young, but older now, like, that's, like, that whole environment is just, like, it makes me uneasy. Not for, like, it's mostly the toilets, I'm going to say that.
I was going to say it's the people that when you try to walk into a building, like, what are you doing here? What you doing? What are you doing here? I'd be like, nothing. I'm going home.
It's mostly the
not
toilets.
Looking for Candyman.
I just don't want shit on me. That's the big
don't
thing.
Don't write shit. Don't write with shit on me.
No. But I do recommend Candyman. I think, like, it got a visceral reaction from me when I was very young. It still, like, affects me as I'm older. I think it's definitely something you should see. I definitely recommend it.
All right, so that's Candyman on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And next week, it's my pick, right? Yeah, I think it is. And we're going to be diving into a genre that we haven't actually explored on this podcast before.
Tentacle porn. Gay porn. We did do that.
No, yeah, we did tentacle porn. There's more on the way. No, just joking.
We're going to do the Italian giallo with Dario Argento's classic Tenebrae.
That's next week
on the Saturday Night Freak. You actually have seen
it. I have seen this one.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll have lots to talk about then. The whole width and breadth of the giallo genre. Next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. Until then, the basement is going dark.